Blog Talk Radio.
Darlings, bonjour, ça va bien. Oh, I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. It's Monday, June 7th, 2021. And I, of course, am Sybil Brunson. Mummy, you can call me Mummy. Darlings, I've been away for a while. We haven't been able to do a show for one reason or another, but we're back on the air. And it's wonderful to be here, even in the midst of this overwhelming heat wave that we're experiencing, certainly in the Northeast. I am here on Come Now, Don't Sulk, as we are every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. And I'm here on the air live. Can you imagine? We're actually live. This is not a pre-recorded. So there might be mistakes. There might be a catastrophe. Someone might try to take their own life with a gun or with a piece of whiskey or something. And speaking of piece of whiskey, I am here with my wonderful muse, my producer, the founder of our sponsor, by the way, and the founder of the Here Be Monsters studio. Would you please welcome Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, we'll get into that in a second. I want to remind everyone that we wouldn't be here if it weren't for daughtersofisis.com. That's daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And by listeners, just like you at home right now, thank you. Daughtersofisis.com, do check out their website during our show tonight. If you're listening, you can also go on the internet and check out daughtersofisis.com. Unbelievable products, essential oils, incredible concoctions to delight your nose, your psyche, your metaphysical self, your psychological and spiritual selves, all the selves that you are, all the different amazing people that are wrapped into each one of you can be awakened and enlivened and enriched with some of Gwendolyn's wonderful concoctions. And Gwendolyn, speaking of that, and speaking of the fact that we're now into June, which I've never understood this, we're technically, I feel it's summer, but of course it's not summer until the first day of summer. I think the calendar is screwed up, but that's another subject for another time. What would be a wonderful fragrance for people to look at tonight and consider when they go to daughtersofisis.com? Have you got some special magical elixir that we should be looking at?
I do. You know, especially in the Northeast, you know where it cools off. And many poets have led us down this lane, you know, how the woods are dark and deep and cool. But there in the forest is the Green Man. And I have a blend of Green Man, which is an incense, an oil, and a mister. And it's verdant. It's the masculine expression in nature, all that projection. It's also very, it takes you into the woods. I'm looking here for the combination I put together. Now, I took parsley and fennel and mugwort and oregano and mint and green apples and spruce.
Wow.
And I put it into a base of oak moss and loamy patchouli. It's really earthy, but very cooling and green. It guides you into those secret cool places that you can go and wander and get your sanity back with, you know, the forest, the wood. And I think that's what summer's about, too.
I do, too. Listen, I want to just remind people at home, I have many, many of Gwendolyn's fragrances. And in the recipes of them, you'll see listed either online or in the bottle, you'll see that that there might be patchouli. Now, I just want to remind people, and I know that you're going to back me up on this, when people of a certain age hear the word patchouli, they immediately think of incense-filled rooms in 1968 in Dearborn, Michigan, or in Ann Arbor, or in Berkeley, or in Greenwich Village, or something, where you can't breathe, and for 3 days you're sweating out the smell of patchouli because you inhaled it, and it's become part of your system. I want to remind you that Gwendolyn is a master chemist, and when she says patchouli, the knee-jerk reaction, unfortunately, for people 50 or really 60 and older, is, oh, dear God, not patchouli. Oh, that's going to give me my bad LSD trip again. So when Gwendolyn lists 10 ingredients, you can be sure that patchouli is a hint. It's like it might not even be identifiable if she hadn't said it. It's like really good Italian cooking. There's fennel in a lot of Italian cooking, but they don't turn it into a, you know, Slim Jim black licorice candy pack. Fennel is licorice flavored, but when it's used as a whisper, you're not even sure what you're tasting. It's in there, and I think that great cooking, like great perfumes, I think that anything that a taste or smell, you shouldn't necessarily always know exactly what it is. The best recipes are things where you're being mystified and enchanted and seduced by all sorts of different complex things happening. And I want to assure you that with Gwendolyn's fragrances, if she says at the end of a list of 10 things, patchouli, I don't want you throwing up your hands and thinking of Art Linkletter's daughter jumping off the building. You know, it's like, no, you're, it's not 1969. We're not in Berkeley. Okay. It's not a love-in on the Spahn ranch with Charles Manson and his family. Okay. So I love the ingredients you listed, and I love that image of the forest, a deep, cool, green forest in the hot summer where you go into the woods and you go walking, and there's this wonderful greenness. That green becomes the all-consuming feeling. It's a wonderful idea, wonderful.
Yeah, the green man, he used to be I used to think of him when I was walking in the woods when I was living in upstate New York as the secret lover. You know, you'd go and fall asleep in the woods, and you had the green man there with you, kind of thing. I'm terrible. I think like that. Yes, I do.
I am. I love color, and I see colors very vividly. I was given the color test to test my color perceptions, and I scored in the very high percentiles on my color sensibilities and my ability to see color. And one of the things I love about color, colors are all wonderful. They're all amazing.
Yeah.
Each color and all the shades have their own mystical and spiritual things.
Yes.
But there is one color that is very, very spooky for us on this planet, and that is the color green, because our fellow beings on this planet, the plant world, most of it is invested in greenness. And
yes.
Coco Chanel had many, many, many comments about fashion and color and style and silhouette and proportion. But one of my favorite quotes was that she said that she was going down the list of colors, and she said, green, this is fascinating, green is the only color that goes with all the other shades of green. So when you wear green, her point was that you can mix greens on your body because it's the only color on the spectrum that allows you to do that. If you do reds, you have to be very careful that one red isn't bluish and the other one is orangey. Or she said black is the hardest color to get right in fashion, because she said if you put black clothes on, different black items, she said when you see them beside each other, you'll see that black is, you know, one black will be browner, one black will be redder, one black will be colder, one will be hotter. Isn't that true? And then black is also a different color because it changes. It oxidizes dramatically over time. And especially with vintage clothing, black can either change in your closet over time, black clothes that you've adored, black evening gowns, black sweaters, black whatever, can change. But even more spooky, vintage items can actually disintegrate from being black because the dyes that were required to make black things would eventually eat the clothes. So if you're ever looking at vintage fashion in a museum, or you're ever going through grandma's trunks or something, and you pull out black clothing, you may find that black clothes, wonderful Victorian dresses, will simply disintegrate in your hands simply because the dyes they used were corrosive. I'm sorry, what?
Even black leather.
Oh,
My sister still wears my mom's little black leather jacket from Saks Fifth Avenue. She bought it in the 40s. And it had those little windmill buttons on them. It has changed color, but it has not faded. It's not a fading. It's a shifting of color.
Yes.
Oh, ask a witch about black. Oh, yeah.
I had the most beautiful, beautiful costume made for me years ago by a great costume designer, and he took all sorts of black silks and brocades, corduroys, prints, all sorts of blacks, and he made a crazy quilt out of them, and then he made me a set of tails, like formal tails, British tails. It was black tails with big lapels, very, very, very stylized, but in black patchwork. All patchwork, the fabrics, the trims, the passementerier, all of that was beautiful, braids and trims and everything. About 3 years later, it had been in a closet in a garment bag, very carefully taken care of, very archival. I opened it up and I thought, you know what, I should pull this out and wear this for a special show that I was doing, a big fundraiser. And I opened it up and some of the blacks had turned literally magenta or like an orchid color, an orchid. Some of them had literally eaten themselves. The black had literally rotted the fabric. The fabric was crumbling dry, from the dye. Amazing. But back to green, I just want to say that green is a mystical color, and it's a color that, you know, surrounds us all the time. We take green for granted because we're all surrounded, even in cities. People are surrounded by green. They eventually will see trees on their street or go to Central Park or Riverside Park or whatever. And then for people in the suburbs and in the country, I mean, you're bombarded by green, especially this year with
green,
so much rain.
Green is also the color of the heart chakra in the auric field.
I didn't know that.
Yes, green. Now, a lot of people will say, well, you can use pink too. But, yes, you can energetically or magically. But if you are able to see an auric field around someone, you can tell where their heart chakra is and how it's fluffing by the color of green that it is. Like it booms green.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea about that. That's wonderful to know. That I love stuff like that. I love stuff like that. Anyway, we're going to talk about one other thing. We've got a caller. Okay. Welcome, caller. Who is it tonight? Who's calling in?
I have to open that mic up. I'm opening the mic up. It's taking forever. But open mic.
Welcome. Good evening, all. This is the incredibly good-looking, but exceptionally modest, Kathleen Johnson.
Everyone's got a shtick. Everyone calls
it. I've been doing that for 20-some years.
Wait a minute. Where's your jazz hands and your tambourine and your pan in front of you with a quarter in it? Come on now, pal. Welcome.
His tails, and all I can think of is the most, you know, the photograph of my father that was always before me growing up was my dad and sitting in a Queen Anne in the old house in his black tails with his white tie on.
So funny.
I'm seeing mummy in black tails and a white tie.
White tie and tails, absolutely.
Well, and you're so goddamn handsome. You'd get away with anything.
I have to confess, you know, as I'm also a professional musician, along with my engineering aspects and stuff. And I was playing when I was out in Columbus. I was playing a lot of the old hippie circuits and blues stuff. And I have full tux, formal tux, half jacket with full tails. You know, like I'd be sitting at a grand piano, but jeans, yeah, biker boots, and sometimes a top hat. And that's what I would perform in. Yes,
yeah,
I
went through a real, like, 1930s Eleanor Powell,
yeah,
Marlene Dietrich period, you know, with tails. I not only had black tails and this patchwork,
uh-huh,
tails, but I also had,
uh-huh,
white tails, which were lined with rhinestones. Oh, yeah, I had, like, just the most gorgeous costumes. Tragically, I'm so big right now. I'm so overweight that I can't fit into anything. I've literally become, like, I'm sort of like, who would I be? Who used to wear caftans all the time, you know, on the Merv Griffin show? Like, people that would, like Phyllis
Nelson
Diller.
Riley.
Or,
oh, yeah.
Nelson Riley used to wear caftans.
Oh, yeah.
And use our camera constantly.
Absolutely, yeah.
I knew Chuck. He would, and he'd wear a baseball cap because he wouldn't put his toupe on.
That's so funny.
I have to admit that, you know, maybe it's just the, you know, the receptor cones in my eyes, but I am very, very drawn to the color green. Matter of fact, I spent a little bit too much money for it, but I bought a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses that the lenses are kind of a reflective iridescent green. Like if you pick up a Japanese beetle and hold it to the light, he will reflect,
yeah,
this iridescent green off the shell. That's the,
uh-huh,
color this is.
Aviators.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've
gone to rose colored glasses. I have a pair,
uh-huh,
of sunglasses that are iridescently reflective but rose colored, and my regular glasses now are rose.
And do they have Polaroid filters in them too to keep the ultraviolet out a,
yeah,
little bit?
Yes, they are the UV.
We really have to do that. Glasses. Folks, for those of you that are still sun worshippers,
yeah,
you know, it goes above and beyond the skin cancer. It's the fact that you can get cataracts. I really want to warn people about that. Mummy had cataract surgery about 5-6 years ago, and it was very, very, very successful. It was a miracle, absolute miracle. I had kind of revolutionary cataract surgery. And I absolutely was amazed. And it was funny because I didn't know I was getting the cataracts until my eye doctor said, you know, he said, I'm seeing you beginning to drift towards cataracts. And it was right when insurance was still paying for cataract surgery. And, of course, that disappeared right away. It was like, so he said, we should get this done as quickly as possible because he said it's the end of the year, and that was 6 years ago. It was 2015. And he said, you will, your insurance, I'm very worried about Congress and about the insurance companies getting away with pulling all sorts of benefits. And sure enough, the following year, most insurance companies wouldn't pay for cataract surgery. So, or at least this wonderful kind that I got. I got a really an amazing kind. So please be careful.
Yes.
Lady and gentlemen, friends, pals, I couldn't call in last night to your show.
I don't know why.
Blogcock bitch wouldn't let me in. She said, and I was calling at the right time, too. I was calling at the right time, but she wouldn't let me in. So what I was wondering
was, yeah, you know, you are always welcome, of course.
Yes. Well, I haven't been horning in because I do like you guys to have your own, you know, playtime together. It's like having mother come in and decide to say, oh, darling, mommy would like to play Monopoly. Can you put away the Frisbees? And that's, you know, no, I don't want to do that. But since we haven't spoken in a while, I'm going to leave it up to you two to give us a subject tonight, and it can be as heavy and as politically charged as you want, or it can be as light and gay and summery as you want. So what has been bouncing around in both of your heads during this this incredibly vile and just contrary Mercury in retrograde? I don't know about you, but I just, oh my God, I think of summer as a time of happiness, and this has been just miserable. So you two come up with something that you would like to talk about, and I will participate in
Very good. Glenn, let me throw this out because, you know, I've had enough drama and things like that for a while. Let's talk about the cicadas that are coming out in a plethora and the deafening sound. But it's a nature sound.
Yeah, love that. I love that. Go ahead.
It's cyclic. It happens every 17 years. I mean, I was in North Carolina one year when it happened, and oh my goodness, I talk about being in the woods too. I was right on the river, back in the woods, off Old Goose Hollow Road in Avery County, and my goodness, that was serenade. It got to a point where I took a break and went to Florida.
I personally don't remember the one 17 years ago, but I do remember the one 34 years ago specifically. And the reason was that I was doing cable television back when it was 10 channels, when it was A through J, and it was a little pencil box. Your cable box was a little tiny, like children's third grade school pencil box sitting on top of your TV. There was no remote. Mm-hmm. Now, you two might remember this. There was no remote. You had to get up and you had to throw a toggle switch on the right-hand side. And then you had push buttons, and the push buttons were labeled A through J. So it wasn't even 26 letters. It was just 10 letters, A through J. And the reason that people were desperate to get it once they figured it out, but they didn't get it for the programming, because there weren't 10,000 networks and channels. There wasn't anything like that. They got it for the reception, because I was living in New York, for instance, and in New York, if it started to thunderstorm or you had a problem on the roof of your apartment building or whatever, your reception would get – or if you had rabbit ears, oh my God, if you had rabbit ears on top of your TV, your reception would be, you know, at the whim of the room, of the fireproofing in your walls, and in the location of your apartment in the building, and then at the weather. So with cable, you had perfect network programming. And then, as an add-on, you had weird little new things called HBO or the newly invented Weather Channel, which everyone just had a big laugh about, because that was just something that Ted Turner was, what a loser. I mean, that's not going to go anywhere, is it? Right? So, and then Channel J in New York City was public access. And the way that Time Warner at that time and other networks that or other cable build companies were doing was they were allowed to have the cable system and the whole satellite thing through the government would permit this if they would allow certain channels to be public access so that the public could actually manufacture their own programs. And this went on for, a few years. And I was on a program. I was on the gay cable network, which syndicated, and we happened to be going across the country doing programs and fundraisers and big shows. And I was in Cincinnati, which was hit in 34 years ago by an enormous, enormous wave of cicadas. So much so that cicadas, when you went outside, and I'm scared to death of bugs. Like, I love gardening and everything, but I don't like large bugs to come up to me. You know, I love butterflies and bees. I'm obsessed with bees and everything. But big things with too many facial parts and eight eyes and, you know, too many legs and hair on their legs or just things that – bugs that kill hummingbirds, they give me the creeps. Well, cicadas are harmless, and they are very important to the environment, very important to the food chain. But when they fly at you, which they do, and they want to land on you and they want to get in your hair, there were people that were running out in traffic and getting killed. There were people driving convertibles in Cincinnati who would be hit in the face by cicadas and would drive into a telephone pole and be killed. They were having traffic accidents. It was shocking. And so that became a topic of comedy for me when I was there, and I did a huge show and I did a television episode on the gay cable network of edible cicadas, and I did it Sybil Brunson's cicada aspic jello molds, and I made an aspic out of cicadas, and I presented it and then served it and ate a slice of it myself. People were absolutely hysterical. People were, and it's somewhere on video. I'm trying to find it on YouTube because my friend Mark Bailey preserved it and filmed the whole thing. And I'm trying to find it because it was very funny. And the crowd went nuts at the Dock, the old big nightclub, the Dock, went screamingly nuts over this recipe. And I did it as one of my cooking shows, you know, my Sybil Brunson's Aspic. And it was lemon. I believe it was lemon aspic. It was a lemon jello thing that I did with carrot shavings and cicadas and everything. So I did that. And I never revealed the secret to the crowd. I never revealed that I didn't actually eat a cicada. It looked like I did, but actually I had made a jello mold. Right? Uh-huh. And I had fashioned all the cicadas. It was a ring. It was the classic Aspic ring with all the sculpting in it, you know, the wonderful jello mold ring. Uh-huh. And I had made one ahead of time so that, you know, it was ready to come out, and I had it out on the stage. I showed making it. I showed putting the cicadas into the slots in the thing, pouring the jello over them, et cetera, et cetera. But I had one come out of the refrigerator, and all the cicadas were made out of raisins. Indeed. So they looked absolutely real. And when I sliced it, I held it up for the camera, and the audience could see it on the TV and everything. And then I ate it, and I did a whole Lucille Ball routine on, you know, getting an antenna caught between my teeth and pulling a leg out. And then part of it was still moving. So I had some of it like actually moving and trying to get out of my mouth, like my tongue. I started moving my tongue in my mouth, and the crowd was hysterical. And that was my cicada memory. And it was the way I dealt with my incredible phobia of bugs. When bugs jump out at me, I become a screeching girl. You know, I'm a third grader again. So anyway, so who else has a funny cicada story?
Well, I was going to say, funny cicada, I think I've passed on, I have twin 4-year-old boys and their baby sister that's 2 years old. And it just so happened my son and my daughter, my son-in-law and daughter, were at a wedding down below Richmond, Virginia. So my wife and I were watching the children. Of course, I was in granddad heaven. And we went out, and I was burning them out at the park, the swings and the slides and jungle gyms and things like that, because granddad was going to need to take a nap too. And we found the husk shells. You know, when they came out of the ground and shed their outer shell, you know, let their wings dry off and fly off. Well, each one was able to handle it and touch it. And, you know, one didn't want to touch it, but he would at least set it on his arm and things. And then the next morning when I went out, there was, a newly released cicada. And he was standing on my car, so I just went up behind him and got him by the wings. And basically, we got two of them. And basically, so we had these two shells, we had two cicadas, and we put them in a jar. And those kids just were amazed with it. And when Mom and Dad came home on Sunday, they showed them their cicadas. Of course, by now they had assumed ambient temperature. but it was amazing. Seeing it through their eyes is what, experience something like that through their eyes and stuff was a real reward to me. So
absolutely.
I was going to say the other thing too is, of course, the nickname for a cicada is a katydid. And my oldest daughter, who's the mother of my grandchildren, right? Her name is Catherine, Kosh, in Polish. And she was little and I was teasing her, you know, she'd do something. I said, who put this glass of, you know, what a hair, you know, or something? Or who put this toy here? And she'd just be giggling and stuff and her finger kind of in her mouth. And her reply was always be, Katie did. Well, that became her nickname, Katie did.
So funny. Actually, when I was in Cincinnati and I was doing this, there was a very prominent entomologist who came, an insect professor and scientist who came to the show, And he raised his hand at one point, and I called on him. You know, I said, do you have a question, sir, there in the fifth row or whatever? And he said, I just want to correct everyone on this. Cicadas are not katydids. He said katydids are green and are not cyclical, and cicadas are this and that. And he went, and it was interesting because back then we didn't have computers yet. And I did look it up, and it was funny. Katydids are different. It's funny.
Yeah,
they're in that group of insects, though, like crickets and everything else, that rub parts of their bodies together and can make all of these noises. I just found out that there's a spider that does the same thing, some rare spider in the Amazon that rubs part of its body or something, or bristles and makes a sound. It was like, they communicate with their own bodies. Cicadas also, if I'm not mistaken, they're only going to be around for like about 2 weeks. There's only about 14 days.
Yeah.
The poor things don't really have long to go. And it's, when you think about it karmically, it's an interesting life. They're laid in the ground as eggs, and they live underground for 17 years. Now, in insect years, that's a long time. People are lucky if they have a cat or a dog live to be 17 years. Here's an insect that's living, albeit a very benighted and strange existence, you know, underground in this strange, you know, nether world, and then, you know, comes out for 2 weeks, mates, and then, you know, the males drop dead and the females deposit their eggs in the ground, and then they're gone. And then we're just covered with, I mean, literally, it's like fall all over again, except instead of leaves, we have millions of dead bodies everywhere that need to be swept up and are crunchy and horrible, you know. So I don't know about you guys, but I have no cicadas yet where I live. Now, I live just outside of Philadelphia. Yes, but it's very strange because there are other suburbs around me that have already said that they have them. Our neighborhood on this mountainside is dead silent. We have none, and we haven't had them flying around. So I don't know. I'm a little spooked because, it's like, Pennsylvania is like Michigan. I mean, there's a lot of toxic waste and pollution. And Pennsylvania is one of the first states to have acid rain. And back in the 70s or whatever. And it's like, it looks lovely where I live. Everything is green and verdant and wonderful. But did we do something to the cicadas to upset the balance here? We have nothing in my neighborhood and nothing for this town. I'm on the main line. So it's Malvern and it's Wayne and it's Berwyn. And we don't have cicadas yet. Do you have them in Florida?
Well, you know, I was going to say, there's a preserve, you know, like a street away, like a canal over. We're backed up on preserves all around us. It's very funny the way it's laid out in Port St. Lucie. And it goes right into the water to the river goes to the ocean. And over there, late at night, and I'm a night owl, so I'll open my window a crack, you know, let the humidity in if I'm up late and having a smoke. And I can hear the cicadas over there. I can hear them.
Wow.
But in my around the house, we have a really wonderful backyard. I mean, it's not like we don't have a lot of trees and natural environment, but we are a neighborhood. We are, you know, little boxes. So I guess there's a place that cicadas just won't go. I mean, I feel a little, usually you can hear some, but right near you, you know, somewhere right close in the tree there or something. Gosh knows, the squirrels are up and down them all night. But no, I can hear it though over there in the marsh. Not around us, though.
Fascinating. And Wayne, what about you?
Well, I have a plethora of them. They are, I'll go up on my, I'm on the third floor in my deck. I'll go out on my balcony, really what it is. It's concrete balcony.
So they're deafening, too.
And they are there are so many of them that basically their sound is a roar. It's a roar of nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are, and they're flying everywhere. I mean, I love nature
yes.
and stuff. And this is old historic Annapolis, you know, where I'm at. So.
I'm telling you, people, if folks at home, if you have never experienced this, if you're young and watching the and listening to the show, or if you live in a place where you haven't really experienced them, there are people, Cincinnati 34 years ago, there are places that I've been where I don't remember where I was 17 years ago, but I remember in New York and in Cincinnati 34 years ago, they were as thick as – it was like out of Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yes.
It wasn't quite biblical. It wasn't like those scary black locust clouds that hit Africa and, you know, the Middle East and devour a field of, you know, acres, miles, square miles of grain. It wasn't like something moving like that, like a black cloud. But when you were outside, they were 6 inches apart in the air. They were mm-hmm. they were 6 to 12 inches apart, which means that you literally were walking through a swarm of them constantly. Like mm-hmm. you, there, by the way, people could not converse outdoors at different points because they
yeah,
would get in your
loud.
Mouth. Yeah, you,
yeah,
they would get in your eyes, your mouth, and the thing is, fortunately, they're completely innocent. Poor things.
Yeah.
They don't bite. They don't do anything that's awful, but you do feel unsanitary. You know, I mean, it's
uh-huh.
kind of weird, and it's creepy. It is creepy. And people would like, you know, people were doing their laundry, like people were rushing home and washing their clothes, and like, you know, people were really, really bombarded, and it was amazing, amazing. I think the thing that was most staggering was to be driving down the street in downtown Cincinnati, and you had to be very, very careful. You had to be moving slowly. First of all, you were crushing them on the street, so you were rolling over
mm-hmm.
them.
Oh,
but
gosh.
You had to be very careful because people at bus stops would be standing there shooing them off and helping each other. People would help get them off their backs or out of their hair.
Yeah.
But you'd have someone run out into traffic. And people, you had to really drive carefully because the news was that, you know, people were running out and not paying attention and getting hit. Or people were in car accidents. You know, it was like, oh, my God. And it was all over in 2 weeks. You know, 10 days,
yeah.
2 weeks, and then it was done. So
you know,
it's weird.
I can remember that down here in the South when I was a kid that happened, where it was that overwhelming. And
there are definite seasons. There are certain years that it's much worse than others. You know, some people,
yeah.
scientists will say, well, this is the 34th or this is the whatever it is. And they'll say, now, folks, you've got to be prepared because this is the 51st anniversary, and they're going to be very heavy. Or the rain, a heavy winter, by the way, can be very good for them. That'll be the trigger because there's so much water in the ground and there's no chance of drought. So they get very, very, very healthy. And so that can mean a big crop of them survive, you know, or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Well, with everything that's going on with the planets and we're in the middle of eclipses. And by the way, Thursday is the solar eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
Coming around
for who?
Yeah, well,
but
yeah.
For who, Gwendolyn? It's not for us in the Northeast, is it? No,
Yes, you should be able to actually see part of it. Yeah,
what?
You should. Yeah,
this Thursday.
Yeah, hold on, I'm checking it out.
Checking it out too. I don't remember that. Wow, a solar eclipse. 2021, here we go, and it says a ring of fire solar eclipse, June 10th, okay, and it's an annular solar eclipse.
They'll be able to see it in Michigan pretty clearly, but you should be able to see a whisper of it, yeah.
Wow. Good. Well, of course, in Michigan, they'll think the world is ending or something, poor things. They'll go out in their grass skirts and their coconut brassieres and shake dried gourds at them, at it. And hopefully, kill some of them, each other, as human sacrifices. Perhaps they'll really get frisky and wipe out entire villages or whatever, you know.
You got it.
I'm trying to see where it's going to be. Michigan, it says, yeah. Eclipses.
It will affect all of us. The effects of it, the annular, will actually affect all of us. So it's between these two eclipse points with these lovely dancing backward planet that has been, you know, our forever zone. So
right.
After the eclipse. We should get a little bit more, and I think you'll find that the cicadas are going to peak then. It'll be interesting.
Oh. The eclipse that was, 4 years ago or whatever, when Donald Trump was looking directly at it like an idiot.
Yes.
I happen to have been on Fire Island that day, and I want to remind people that if you ever are lucky enough to see a solar eclipse, of course, don't look at it directly. But if you get special glasses or the special device or whatever, but if you really want a treat, go someplace where there are lots of trees, lots and lots and lots of trees, and look at the ground, because the sunlight that is dappling through onto the ground,
mm-hmm.
Okay, you're not going to believe this if you have never seen it, but I told like 100 people on Fire Island. I was out on the boardwalks, and we were all standing there, and people were trying to look at it, and I said, you don't have to look at it, just look at the ground. And where the sun is dappling, all the speckly dapples are all mm-hmm. the eclipse, because they mm-hmm. become instant, I don't know what you would call it, but they become the lens through which you can see the eclipse. So on the ground, you'll see all these crescent moons, millions of them.
Nice.
All, it's the most amazing thing. And I remember that 4 years ago or three, whatever it was, when that eclipse happened, it was wonderful. And the eclipse I remember before that was, I was in New York City, and I was in Riverside Park, and I was showing people, and that was a dramatic one. That eclipse, actually, the sky did get dim. It was strong enough where it started to get dim and strange, and that was very interesting. The Fire Island one 4 years ago wasn't so much, but the sky actually dimmed for a short while. And so if you are out and you are in that pathway, and it, by the way, the map is showing, it's pretty dramatic. It's going through Georgia. It's going from Oregon to Idaho, and then straight across down to, my God, it's really crossing the United States dramatically. It's an annular, which means that the moon is farther away, so it's not going to cover the sun completely as dramatically. But if you're in that very dark red stripe that goes across, it's going to go through Missouri. It's amazing. Amazing. Look at the ground. Go where you're in your backyard and look at the ground, and you will see what I'm talking about. It's really quite exciting. So anyway, it is an interesting time, as Gwendolyn said, between cicadas and eclipses and Mercury in retrograde. Are you two finding this summer to be a time of joy or challenge or grief, or is there any emotion that you're noticing more prevalent than not right now?
Glenn, you go
and
first.
Why?
I'll follow up to Glenn.
I'm fine.
Okay, Glenn, roll another one and then I'll share.
I'm fine.
Belly
up to the bar, boys. Belly up to the bar.
People were, they've been pent up, cabin fever, right? And they want to get out. And I mean, you know, like the parks and the town dock, which is the old historic dock in downtown Annapolis. People are coming out. They're just walking the historic streets and things like that, getting an ice cream. You know, popping into this restaurant and maybe getting a dozen oysters or stuff like that. But there's also the other thing where they want to get to someplace, and now people are out, so the traffic has been exponentially increased. And now you've got this road rage thing going on, too, now. So it's kind of like, you know, there's this euphoria. I'm out. I'm in the sunlight. I'm with people. I'm experiencing things. But then on the other hand, to get to that, there's a lot of traffic and then the road rage and short tempers and aggressive driving and all that crap. So it's the yin and the yang.
Yes. You know, it's funny because there's so much to be grateful for. A year ago today, where we were and what we were experiencing and all of it. It's just so much to be grateful for. January 6th, the riots of January 6th feel to me like 10 years ago. I feel like I don't feel that life goes by quickly. I feel that life is enormous, as I say all the time. But I must say that we have so much. COVID lifted quicker than I thought it would. The vaccines came out quicker than I thought they would. The vaccines were less complicated and less trouble than I thought they would be. The fact that three different companies, major corporations, stepped up to the plate for free and, you know, gave vaccines to the world for free that quickly and that mostly uncomplicated. You know, I love these doom people who are like, oh, 1 in 10,000 people got a rash. This is the end of the world. It's like, really? Really? You need to remember what it was like when I was young and people were still dying of polio because there was no vaccine yet. You know, so, I mean, the ingratitude, the willful ingratitude and willful stupidity overwhelms me, as you both know about me at this point. There's so much to be grateful for. There's so much.
Exactly.
And yet, I guess, I don't know what it is. I think that there's something that soured so many aspects of our lives. I guess that we're all dreading that Joe Biden is going to be crushed, you know, by the Republicans, the Republican, you know, intransigence, you know, Senator Manchin from West Virginia is like public enemy number one. It's just so much that vexes us. And yet it's summer. We should be like, I guess really we've got to be present, mindful, and grateful. And I say that at the end of all my YouTube videos, my Tourette's. But you know something? Mummy is the worst practitioner of that. I am the worst. Teachers often have to learn what they teach more than anybody else. And that's why I advocate it. Be present, be mindful, be grateful, because I am someone who struggles with this all the time. I struggle with being in the world and of the world. I struggle with remembering that everything around me is borrowed, and there really is no time to be ungrateful. And so I just found this summer to be unusually blue for me. And it's just not like me. And especially because I'm living in a magical place. I have literally won the lottery. My life with George, we won the lottery. We didn't have a ticket, but what happened to us in the last 365 days is less than that, even less than that, is purely a miracle, a miracle. And I try all the time to find joy, whereas usually this is the kind of thing that hits me in January and February. It's funny that it's hitting me in spring and in this beautiful summer. So I'm just, if you're out there, I wish you'd called in tonight, you know, and maybe we'll talk about this again next week. Is there something called the summer doldrums? You know, is there something where you can have a tan and you can be at the pool, or you could be at the ocean and you could be splashing the waves and you can be miserable? It's like, oh, brother.
I think there's also you got to consider, Mummy, that there is sort of a social doldrum going on right now. People are still experiencing a whole lot. Just think about the emotions and everything we've been through in the last few years, topping it off with a year of isolation with COVID and all of the fear.
The humiliation of being an American.
It's sort of a boomerang effect. And it's hitting society right now. And I think folks are, especially right now, the last winter, last December, whatever was going on in your world, in the beginning in November and December of 2020 is sort of coming back around to say, how are you doing now as to then, and comparing the positives to the negatives. There is a boomerang effect going on.
Yeah.
So people are looking up, and they don't know whether to believe it or disbelieve it, and they're unsure of their next step, which is not a bad thing to be at. Uncertainty, yeah. The unknown, is an adventure. And all you have to do is rely on your own best skills of choice, you know? That's the positive side of it. The negative side is like, are you fucking kidding me? Are we going through, you know, why? You hear it all. But it really is, it's just sort of a boomerang effect socially. On the other hand, people are getting out and about and have been for a few months, traveling and making new acquaintances and all of that. So it's going on, but we don't believe it. I think that's the thing. And during these eclipse points, everything is in heightened emotional state, you know?
Yeah. I think it's funny because there's an ice cream parlor near where I live, and it's in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, which is right on the main line, and it's called Handel's. And Handel's has been there for, I guess, 60 years, 80 years, and they make homemade ice cream, and it's notoriously great ice cream. We have a couple of real boutique bakery specialty shops. It's amazing the number of mom-and-pop glorious places that still exist and have not been driven out of business. Anyway, it's funny because people are walking into Wegmans without masks, because that's, you know, we're getting to the point where people are either double vaccinated or claiming that they were. And, but yet safe distancing is continuing. And it's like instinctively people do not want to stand behind or in front or beside someone in line, like at Handel's. So you have a line out the door, line, you know, out into the parking lot for people waiting to get ice cream, but they're still keeping a basic 6 foot, 8 foot distance between each other without masks. So it's interesting the things that we're scarred by, that we may be permanently changed by. People want a radius around them, so they don't want to be standing. I've noticed that people don't want to be talking face-to-face with neighbors or with friends, or not friends, but like people at the store or people on the sidewalk, that a lot of people find very uncomfortable now to be standing where we used to stand 2 years ago. If you talk to someone and ask them directions, you didn't stand 8 feet away from them. You might walk up and say, excuse me, can you show me on this map? No one would take a map and hold it up in front of somebody and do that now. It's so interesting the way we've changed. And as I said, and I don't mean this in a racist way at all, but it's like, I wonder, are we all going to end up as Koreans? You know, because it was the Asians in New York City, for me, in the 70s, who you would see wearing the surgical masks or the special masks, because they were so used to air pollution in their own home countries that when they came to New York, even though New York's air was not as bad as theirs, it was much worse than it is now. I mean, New York cleaned up its act completely. Even Los Angeles cleaned up its act. But you'd see Asians wearing masks and you'd think, oh, are they sick or have they got some sort of flu or tuberculosis? It was like, no, they were trying not to get it. And I wonder how soon, you know, I feel awkward not wearing a mask now. I feel like, oh, I really should. And I keep a mask in my pocket. I always have a mask in my pocket no matter where I go.
Same here.
You know, it's like when I walk into Wegmans, I still sort of feel like, well, I could put on a mask. And it's funny because in Wegmans, oh, my God, it's the size of Wyoming. The store is like, you know, it's 400 square miles to the produce section. You know, it's like, so you're not going to be near anyone. The closest you're going to be near to anyone is a Conestoga wagon wheeling its way across to the dairy aisle or something. I mean, it's wild. But you just feel like, well, maybe I should keep wearing a mask. It's interesting what all of this is going to do to us. how soon are we going to be free of the nightmare of Donald Trump? Of course, he's hovering in the wings like a boogeyman in a child's bedroom. You know, I mean, he's the creature in a closet for a third grader, you know, that's still bumping around in a closet. We're not rid of him yet, or his friends, you know, his minions. But it's like, is that what's making us blue? Is that what's making us feel ill at ease? You know, I just wonder. And on that note, I think that Gwendolyn should stop making fragrances that are so nice and should start actually producing serious, serious heroin-based drugs for us that we script on. It can have some patchouli-like smell, but it should be based in, like, heavy, heavy opiates, drugs that shut us down, and that way we can buy her fragrances and say, I feel wonderful on Gwendolyn's new fragrance, Summer's Eve, or whatever it's called.
Now, that's interesting, because I actually do have, I have cataloged and made ayahuasca teas and peyote juices and magic mushroom, and I make them into homeopathy and an essence of them, and they're in my sprays where they're supposed to be, where I'm guided to put them, especially in the Mayan. And I've worked with that for 20 years. Because not everybody can grasp the floor wasting beneath them and seeing the serpent, you know? It has to be a subtle thing, that aha moment of a condensed version of what the trip is bringing you to, an awareness, an enlightenment. And homeopathy can get the job done over time. So I use them in my myths and other applications in the homeopathic way. I've always done that. It's part of pharmacopoeia.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Well, please do more. And if you have to, please include a syringe with your fragrance or a hookah. I mean, you should have a gift catalog now in which who are those guys that do the fruit, that David and whatever it is, the fruit of the month club thing with the chocolates and the sausages and everything. You know what I mean? Harry and David. Well, they did cheeses and salamis and everything. And finally, they began to get into gifts. And so they started making gifts that were like the cheese board and the basket that went with it and the serving board and the wonderful marble handled knife and everything. You should be doing fragrances, and then we have to do a gift catalog where people can get the Gwendolyn syringe, perhaps an assortment of very gaily colored syringes. Yep, a hookah, like a paisley hookah and a polka dot hookah and a striped hookah. All the things that people need to do to really enjoy
Chinese
your product in a full and in a drugged way, so that if they abuse your products, they do in fact have to go dry out at Betty Ford Clinic. That's what we should do. I'm looking at the time, and we're all out of time. And I have to say that I don't know if anyone's out there listening right now, but I had a ball with my two friends here tonight, and I really need this.
I did too.
So I'm going to sign off, but I am going to go to the kitchen and get my piece of whiskey, as Gwendolyn says, and then I'm going
to
maybe take I don't have a joint in the house. I don't have a joint, but I'll figure it out. I want to remind you, you've been listening to Blog Talk Radio Network. You've been tuned into the Here Be Monsters studio, and we are, of course, Come Now, Don't Sulk, and Mummy has to... I made up that title. Mummy, come now, don't sulk. Look at that. I think you screw up. How fuck-assed I am. What an idiot. Anyway, this program was brought to you by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and by listeners just like you. Thank you. I want to thank Wayne for being here tonight as our special guest on the panel.
Always a pleasure.
And we will be here next Monday, again, at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. I love you, Gwendolyn. I love you, Wayne. Have a lovely week. And we will see you all next week. Good night, everybody.
Very good. Good show. Thanks.